doing quite well.
How many books are you planning to distribute?
50,000. In the next 4 weeks.
4 weeks. So it's going to go, we're going into the gym last week. 14.
But it's like Monday.
I was discussing with Arjuna the other day about book distribution, and sort of came up the idea of, well, what happens when people don't read the books, or are we distributing enough books, and should we follow up by doing other programs? And I think perhaps sometimes with the interest or emphasis on Namhata and other activities, devotees can maybe sometimes do a little perspective on what book distribution is about. I know even recently we did a survey about how many people read the books or what they think of us. But actually, it was for our information, but we shouldn't try to measure the success of our book distribution by those things. The success of our book distribution isn't measured by the number of people that join. It's not measured by the number of devotees we make. It's not measured by the number of people who even read the books. And, or even the number of people that are favorable to the movement at the present time. I think all of these are... Well, they're the same people who join or become
read.
Devotees,
yeah.
Who even read the books. Because I think that the Prabhupada's concept and Acharya's concept of book distribution is much broader than that. And these things in one sense can become somewhat of a diversion or even a bit of a contamination to pure philosophy of what book distribution is actually all about. At least from my understanding, Krishna consciousness is a movement which is meant to benefit the world. And it's like water. Water falls and, you know, on stones it has little or no effect, and on arid soil it has good effect, and, you know, other types of porous or non-porous objects it has varying effects according to the porosity. However, and that's the same for Krishna consciousness. We are just, our business is to distribute the mercy of Krishna consciousness. And that's the mercy of a Vaishnava. My Vaishnava's mercy is samsara bhavana lila. He distributes Krishna's mercy. And that's what we're meant to do. So, because by coming in contact with Krishna, Krishna consciousness, the holy name, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, a Vaishnava in any way whatsoever, people become benefited. And that benefit is something which is not, it is immeasurable, Prabhupada used that phrase so many times, immeasurable by material means. So when we use these material means to try and analyze, it's not right. It doesn't give us a real measure of our success, because our success is immeasurable. You cannot measure the benefit people get from coming in contact with Krishna consciousness. You'll see some results, but some results that we see may just be the very bud of something which is yet to transpire over long periods of time, not just socially, but even individually in people's lives. And somehow or another, our business was to just give everyone the opportunity to contact Krishna consciousness, knowingly, unknowingly, to greater or lesser degree. And, well, there are different ways of doing that, right? We can go out on the street and talk to people, and we know how long, how many people we get to talk to. We talk to 5-6 people, and then it's not necessarily that simply by our contact they're going to become greatly influenced. They'll be influenced to a certain extent, but we're limited to the number of people we talk to. When we go out and do Harinam, well, we reach perhaps a wider group of people that way, because we have the visual effect and the audio effect. But then we know we pass down the street, and then after the sound of the kirtan is gone, the benefit is also there. People get a piece of prasadam, and they also become benefited. They put it in their mouths and they eat it, but obviously it doesn't go beyond that, or at least it shouldn't. Maybe some other worms and so on benefit, but no other human beings do. Temple are in cities, but obviously temples are when people come to the temples. And festivals, well, festivals are on certain occasions, and they also go to certain geographical areas. But when we see book distribution, books are a certain commodity that you reach a lot of people with. It doesn't stop with the individual, and the effect is ongoing. The effect is ongoing in the sense we've discussed before. If it's just in someone's home, you know, they'll see it, knowingly, unknowingly. They'll dust the bookshelf. They'll be doing devotional service. In other words, a book is such a sort of permanent thing that it has the type of effect that many of these other devotional activities don't have all the common facilities which are associated with books. They're permanent, they get around, a lot of people benefit by them, you can distribute them to a lot of people, and the vibration they get out of it is actually the purest vibration, because it's Prabhupada's vibration. So books in this way are actually, when Prabhupada then would say, it's the Brihat Mridanga. It is, gives the greatest benefit to the most number of people. Now we may say, well, what's the benefit? And when we read Prabhupada's letters, we see Prabhupada would not necessarily, he would say, if they take the book, if they read it, they would say, if they read a line, or if they just read a word, their lives will be changed. So, or if they just even touch it, or look at the picture. And it may vary from different people. Some people we try to stop on the street to talk to, they won't even stop, right? So your preaching wouldn't get very far, or they don't come to the temple. But when you at least get them to take a book, all right, they haven't read the book. But the fact that they took the book means that sometime in the future they will read a book. That point was brought up this morning in the Nectar of Devotion. The fact that you're engaging in devotional service in this life means that you engage in some devotional service in the previous life. So if they have absolutely no credit, and all they've done is take the book and thrown it away, it'll qualify them at least in the next life, or at some future date, to keep the book. And then from keeping the book, they'll come to read the book. And from reading the book, they'll start chanting Hare Krishna, and chanting Hare Krishna, they'll become a devotee. And it may take 20 lifetimes. That's not our business, that they're not knocking down the front doors and coming in right now just because we're distributing the book. Our business is we are planting seeds. And how long those seeds take to sprout will depend upon the ground we're putting them in. But the type of seeds we got is if we put it in that ground, even if it's bedrock, it'll grow. It'll just take time, that's all. And that should be our conviction. We are here, and we're out to just distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, that somehow or another, no matter who comes in contact, we know that they're going to, and their lives are changing. Maybe this lifetime, or 5 lifetimes, or 100 lifetimes. But the important thing is not for us that, well, that they haven't become a devotee overnight, is that we are bringing about a change in people's lives, will bring about a change in civilization, and therefore in the whole profile of this planet. And we should be satisfied with that. That is actually our responsibility. So we should maintain that broader perspective of book distribution, that it's not measurable immediately by who's joining, or even how many people are necessarily becoming favorable. They may not be favorable. Just like Jagai and Madai, they weren't favorable, right? First they started hearing the chanting. Well, they were on the other side of the Ganga drunk, and they would hear the kirtan of Srivas Anga. And from that, they started mimicking the devotees. When they were drunk, they would imitate them, just like, you know, the drunks come along with us on the Harinam, and they would also dance like that. And from that, they became qualified to meet Lord Nityananda. Everyone doesn't bump into Lord Nityananda. You know, you have to have, that's to have a certain amount of, so by that mimicking, by coming in contact with that son, then they became qualified. It isn't that they became favorable. Oh yeah, hey, let's go, let's go over there and chant along with them. No, they remained rascals. So even people don't necessarily become favorable. The Prabhupada would say about a newspaper article, favorable or not favorable wasn't the issue. It was the fact that they were chanting Hare Krishna, that was the real thing. Because even if they're not favorable, they're saying Krishna and their lives are changed. They're saying it offenselessly, it doesn't matter, it's still their lives change. Because they're vibrating, and that will qualify them later on. So more, we should be very confident of this, that this is actually our real message that we're distributing. This is the satisfaction of a devotee. Devotee doing sankirtan, bhakti tradition, should feel very confident. All of the activities, spiritual activities we perform, are all on the same absolute level. But in terms of evaluation that Srila Prabhupada gave of emphasis on the most effective way of reaching individuals, that is through this means of books. Well, maybe there's videos and other things, but, you know, if there's a natural calamity, if there's a war and there's no electricity, then, and you've got nothing to plug in the wall, then all these things are also valid. The books are always there. And even if someone goes blind, someone else can read to them. So it's a permanent cultural contribution meant for re-spiritualizing the world, and we've got 10,000 years to go, and we have to see that, well, things may not necessarily happen in our time. Just as, for instance, I used the example of America, when America used to be a more or less a slave colony of England, and then they broke away, they were founding fathers, and they had an image, they had a vision. That vision didn't mature in their lifetime. It's developing now. Anyway, it's a mundane example. So similarly, we also have a vision. We have a vision that we want everyone to be able to chant Hare Krishna. We just want to give them that chance, that opportunity. So we're going out and we're doing this, we're introducing this. It may not, many things won't happen in our lifetime. In the next generation's lifetime, the generation after that, more people will be joining, and high court judges may be wearing tilak, and so many things may be taking place. He wasn't necessarily attached. He left. Things are happening now that didn't happen in his lifetime. So, but he's satisfied. Yes, let me lay the groundwork. And for that, we can actually see even Srila Prabhupada's entire life. We recognize that Prabhupada was an eternal liberated soul who came from the spiritual world to establish ISKCON and to translate his books. Why did he wait till he was 70-year-old to do it? Why didn't Krishna let him do it when he was 16 and have a whole lifetime of doing it? Krishna had certain reasons, certainly. But one thing we can pick up out of it is that preparation and foundation, that planting the seed and lifetime in preparation, Satsuk Maharaj nicely titled those two books, are fundamentally very important. And just as Srila Prabhupada also took a whole lifetime of preparation to do 12 years of active preaching in the West. Successful preaching. Prabhupada preached in India, but people didn't receive him very well. He really met with reception, a successful reception, when Prabhupada came to the West. So Prabhupada prepared for 70 years in order. So we should also see like that, the results don't necessarily in spiritual life immediately mature. Jesus Christ is a good example. He preached for 3 years, he got crucified on the cross, and then hundreds of years later, Christianity really began to spread. So same type of thing. It's very rare in a religious organization, religious movement, that everything just sort of happens all at once in one lifetime. We see even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's God himself. But he preached, but didn't preach all over the world either. He also laid down a certain foundation in India. So we should be very confident, and we should be very determined that there's no better means of preaching than the distribution of literature, and we should not be deterred by the fact that, you know, so-called results. The results are simply the number of books that you distribute. Plus, that's the only thing Prabhupada gave emphasis to. And those books themselves are cognizant living entities. They will move. They will influence other people. Our business is just, we're just passing out Krishna. That's all. And we're just getting as many people as possible to come in contact with Krishna somehow or another. And how they're going to benefit, and how that's all between Krishna and them. But that's not our business. It's like we're a postman, right? A postman, he doesn't, you know, wait around to find out, oh, was it a bad letter? Oh, the person's crying. Oh, wow, what a job I got. I'm bringing so much suffering to people. They're getting all these bad letters that this guy just got, that his wife divorced him. It's not his business. It's not a postman's worry. He doesn't care what's in the letter, whether it's good news or bad news, or someone got a million-pound check. Why am I not getting benefit? After all, I'm the one who delivered it. Why shouldn't I get a cut out of this? No, he's just delivering it. Whatever is in the mail, it's money, it's good, it's bad, it's got nothing to do with me. I've got a job. Similarly, that's our business. Our business, we've got a job to do. We're bringing the message to people. What happens to them, what they do with that message, whether it's receptive or not receptive, how much time it takes, that's not our concern. Our concern is we are just transcendental postmen. We got this letter that came from Krishna. Prabhupada, you know, addressed it to all the living entities on this planet, and we're delivering it to them. That should be really our conviction. How many letters can we deliver? You know, Prabhupada's wrote unlimited copies of these letters. So our business is how many letters we can just deliver to everyone, and when we see that they've got their post letters, our job is done. If the guy never opens his letter and rips it up, doesn't matter. Our business was to deliver the mail. What he does with it, that's his affair. So we should really be, and that is our success. Our success will be our advancement in Krishna consciousness, simply on the basis of this service. And whether 100 people become devotees by my preaching, or nobody becomes devotee, it doesn't make any difference in the speed in which you're going back to Godhead, or how much Krishna is pleased with you. It's a completely separate affair. Whereas we specifically do our service, just like we preach to individuals. We preach to them, they may take Krishna consciousness, they may not, and then at a certain point they may leave. We simply try our best. Of course, that trying should be qualitative. We should try really nicely, using our intelligence, all the skills that we have, in order to make it in such a way that the message that we're giving is as palatable, or the way we're presenting the message is as palatable as the message actually is. That we're not turning off anybody. In other words, someone got a check for £1 million, and we're not turning them off from actually opening the letter and cashing the check. So that should be our main, that's the only thing that we have to worry about, is we don't interfere with the message, or we don't turn anybody off from the message. But Prabhupada would say, even in the extreme case where accidentally that may happen, and it shouldn't be that it's an excuse for us to be impolite or improper in our dealings, but accidentally someone's even turned off, they still benefit. Why? Because they got a book. And even if they became antagonistic, they're still, that antagonism is temporary, but their benefit is eternal. But of course, that should be our concern. We should present the book in such a way that hopefully that person will think, I met such a nice person, I'm really keen to find out what it's about. Well, we should, in ourselves, we can be thinking, I want to be able to distribute books in such a way that, you know, everyone will read the book. Just like a preacher is trying to make devotees, he wants everyone he meets, he wants to try and make a devotee. But on the other hand, we shouldn't consider that we failed if we're not
ISKCON's
fail. Or that ISKCON's fail. Comments?
Brilliant. That's it in a nutshell.
No, it's... Add some...
No, I can't add anything to that. There's one lecture I was listening to, the Prabhupada was talking about that, and he said, don't think that what you're doing is in vain. This is the whole point again that Maharaj was talking about. I mean, he's talking to everybody here about this idea that, you know, we're doing what we're doing as a part of a vast movement that's arranged by the Lord. But when it comes down to you or me, you know, in the purely subjective involvement in the whole thing, we have to practice patience. The fact is that things, spiritual advancement for us, I see, again, like in 16 years of being in this movement, I see it's not real spiritual advancement for us comes through hard work over an extended period of time. And we just have to be patient. We just have to be patient. I think... Again, this is an opinion. I think it has something to do with the fallen nature of our backgrounds. It's not good for us to get things easy. Because as soon as we get something easy, kick back. And the fact is, what you're talking about is the desire to kick back anyway. Right?
So where's the question of... Where's the question, I mean... Easy. Who gets it easy? Who makes advancement spirituality easy? I mean, where's the, you know, the yogis who are meditating for 60,000 years?
Yeah.
And Prabhupada says on the tape, and by you going out for a few days on Sankirtan, you make the same advancement they make in 60,000 years. So what is it that they got easy? They don't get level God.
But then again...
How much easier can you get? Just like, you know, 20, 30 years of hard work. Not asking you to do 60,000 years of hard work.
But then again, there's another point here that I think, you know, Gaura can really take heart from, all of you can take heart from. It's like, just the other day when we were in Europe at this meeting, but the last part of it was just like an open discussion about book distribution. And, you know, Hari Keshmaraj is pointing out that obviously it's the fact that we see that the strenuous nature of what we do in book distribution means that there's going to be a time when it's going to be too tough. Physically, the body gives out a little. You can't just go on like this. But then he says, at that point, I make these Sankirtan men temple presidents. And then, you know, there's a whole different dimension of itself in your service when things like that happen for you. I mean, you're just in your mid-20s. By the time you're 40, you can have a temple like this with 60, 80 devotees and all sorts of preaching going on. And you're seeing all sorts of activities developing alongside of the book distribution.
You go open a center.
I mean, we were discussing this.
You distribute books through your book distributors.
we were discussing this with Amita the other day in that meeting, that like in the region that we do Sankirtan now, apart from Essex, which is actually Essex is a good example. Essex was one of the counties in our region, but we don't do Sankirtan anymore, because there's a center now, Krishna Chaitanya is doing Sankirtan book distribution in Essex. So there's no reason why over the next 10 years or so we can't have another 16, 17 centers in this part of England with Sankirtan parties working under all of you. Doing every town and village in a particular county and developing all sorts of aspects of book distribution.
Until we get to that stage, everywhere we've got the center in every town and village, I mean at least one, how many churches are there in every town? And all the garbage out. Well, you know, just like at a certain point, pornography used to be, at least I remember in my youth days, pornography used to be illegal. Similarly, non-Vaishnava literature just make it illegal in the future. Can't read anything else. Except those things which are related to Krishna consciousness and betterment of mankind. You know, they waste time reading Moby Dick and Hardy Boys and things like that. Mm-hmm. Who wants to read about a whale?
But I think you should have that vision. It's like, I think all of the older devotees who've done their time feel in that way, that the type of facility that they're offered as they get older, you know, to actually manage and train and oversee the development of book distribution is in some way a reward for just, you know, slogging it out. Everybody's, you know, done their time on Sankirtan. And, you know, Krishna never forgets you. It's not going in vain. Krishna never forgets you.
The essence of what we're saying is that if Srila Prabhupada is pleased, then we're pleased. The pleasure, you know, all of us who have done book distribution for any length of time know that there's a certain satisfaction that comes when we give that book and the person takes the book and smiles at it and goes away, that you cannot calculate. And you cannot calculate the satisfaction that comes. What to think if you've given up, you know, even 30 or 40 or 20 or whatever. So when you're doing your best to do that and the books are going out, then you become satisfied. Why else is it that all of us that stay in the temple, whenever the traveling Sankirtan devotees come back, we notice that the level of the kirtan, the level of the intensity of the classes, the whole atmosphere is just jacked up about, you know, who knows, a million times. Why is that? So how you yeah, with the walkers and, you know. Isn't that a measure of satisfaction? And that pleasure is eternal. And all of us know it. Well, done book distribution for any mention of it, you know, it's eternal pleasure and knowledge that comes from having done it. The realizations that you get of Prabhupada's philosophy when you're out there, who can repeat the training up that you get from Krishna and want to study directly and how to preach and how to understand this philosophy? How can you compare it, or how can you value it? Like Maharaj said, it's beyond our conception. So much benefit beyond our conception. It describes 1/11th of a second association with the spiritual world is enough to make you eligible for going back to the spiritual world. What to speak of pleasing him as much as you're pleasing him by going out there day after day after day and giving up each chapter.
It's just a natural kind of battle. world. Steps in the, you know, hard thing to do. And there's always times when you feel like you've been jaded. But then, you know, that passes.
I'd say probably most of the reason that many householders aren't in active preaching situations is not so much of the lack of ability or training. It's just due to certain historical reasons they lost heart between Prabhupada's disappearance, you know, disappearance of gurus and GVCs, and so that sort of pulled out the rug from individuals, and now they're in a certain mold and it's difficult for them to get back. But certainly our idea of householders is not that, we're not training devotees to become householders. We're training them how to, Prabhupada's idea was to train them how to be preachers and spread Krishna consciousness. And, or if they're not going to be active preachers, at least that they should be active in showing a certain way of life, varnashram, cow protection, etc., which in itself elevates the general quality of mankind, you know, quality of living. So I don't think that, I think in our newer generations we'd hope that that's not a problem. We're seeing that it's not. We've got so many of our younger householders, you know, Divya Singh at the Tikshu, Krishna Dharma, Krishna Chaitanya, they're going out and they're preaching Bristol,
Lokabandhu.
And they're going, opening preaching centers, and we would hope that our devotees would continue to do that also, going the buses on up to Bristol. And they're going, opening preaching centers, and we would hope that our devotees would continue to do that also, going the buses on up to Bristol. There's unlimited places. Well, they're limited in terms of how many big cities, but then in terms of how many people there are in population centers, to the proportion of devotees that we have in the turnover, more or less it is unlimited. You know, 40, 50 years of preaching in an area of 50,000 people means that you'd have a facility for having 1,000 centers in the UK, and that means, you know, facility for at least 20,000-25,000 full-time devotees to operate and man those centers and be preaching. And anyway, there's no limit really to the scope.
We got over 120 places in our region with a population more than 20,000 people, and there's 25 cities of over 100,000. What to speak of the boroughs of South London? That's not even counting the boroughs of South London. Of 10 million, 12 million people in our region.
I was reading in the Krishna book how Queen Kunti, she would behave in such a way as to feel Krishna personally present in her life at all times. And I was thinking how, especially when I was down south and I was doing some of these shops, how when we're going to a shop, even though externally we're associated with the shopkeeper, like we're in this mundane atmosphere of the shop, if we can internally, you know, associate, you know, just cultivate some transcendental associations in our minds that we can deal with these personalities and stay pure in our motive, what we're doing in that shop. And at the moment we start to think we're the doer. It's a bit like again become a mouse. So, but I find it very hard to just like keep that ticking over all the way through the day. So I'm wondering, what advice you can give us to try and maintain that meditation over the course of the whole day, like 7 or 8 hours.
If you get into, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Raghunath Das Goswami that externally you may do so many things, but internally you should always be worshipping Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. So, I mean, sometimes that's a little difficult to do. Like when you're on the street and you're trying to move real fast and simultaneously you're trying to think about, you know, decorating a pavilion for Radha and Krishna inside, you may end up bumping into a bus or something like that, and you don't necessarily do what you're supposed to do. And I don't quite think Arjuna was thinking about that when he was busy killing millions of people on the battlefield. So a devotee may really become absorbed in his service. And I mean, the purpose of our books is to distribute, and really, if we're really absorbed in trying to give Krishna consciousness to everybody and seeing how we can actually give that book to that individual, then I don't think we're going to get into any mentality of being any doer. If you're extremely active, it's only when you're going to stop that it's going to come, well, now I did 150 books today, so then you have to deal with the mentality, and then you have to use your intelligence and preach to yourself and remember the instructions that we've, you know, received. But if we're actually really busy during the day, you don't have too much time to get into any trip. If someone's moving non-stop, you know, approaching everyone, trying to give them Krishna consciousness, there's not really much time that you really got to either think that you're the doer or the non-doer.
I'll just read something. This is from a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote on January the 2nd, 1972. There's no difference between chanting Hare Krishna or Sankirtan and doing one's assigned work in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we have to do so much management or office work, but Lord Chaitanya promises that because in the Kali Yuga this is required for carrying out the preaching mission, he gives assurance that we will not become entangled by such work. So the point is that, like Maharaj said, Arjuna was just thinking about fighting while he was fighting. But that thinking about fighting as a prescribed duty is none different than thinking about offering arti to Radha and Krishna. It's the same principle. Because you're thinking about what you're doing for Krishna's service. And another point you said about, you know, we're going into these shops and associating with the shopkeeper. That's, you're going in the shop to give the shopkeeper your association. Associating with people means that you embrace their ideas and become a part of what they're doing. But we're not doing that. We're going to try and make them a part of what we're doing. So we're going to give our association, not to take their association.
In one purport in chapter 11, Prabhupada describes proper mentality. I've been given this service to do by Krishna. And then Prabhupada states after that, if one has that mentality when he begins his service, and it's only natural that we from time to time think of Krishna during that service, even if he's absorbed. I know so many times when we were out of the confusion, the thought will come from, oh Krishna, I made a mistake, or something happened and it caused me some, what's the word, explanation, and it's, oh Krishna, Chaitanya. It's natural. You see some ghastly thing and you say the name of Krishna. So it's natural for you to periodically think of Krishna during your experience. It's not that you have to think about it every, you know, second, like Mara said, and forget what you're doing.
I remember doing that thing.
You did?
Well, not a second time. I remember it was in a lawyer's office when we were suing Chicago for $1 million, $100 million. I was in the lawyer's office, and I just started thinking about the babies. I got completely left, and they just waited, and I was just thinking and thinking. And they stopped talking, and we were just sitting there waiting. And I just, oh. Very impractical. If our business is to do our service, that's what we gauge our Krishna consciousness by in our service to Krishna. And it is, like you say, naturally it will come like that, you may think. But specifically, let me somehow or another just try to distribute these books. It's actually a simple statement, but it's according to our level of advancement, it will have deeper and deeper significance. In other words, let me give everybody a book, let me try to distribute these books. It will vary to how much I interfere with that book distribution process, and how much I put aside my own difficulties, false egos, problems, and just try to be a completely surrendered instrument in the hands of, you know, those who want these books distributed. Well, there's no difference in the information. Information is the same. But Prabhupada would consider that people tend to hang on to big books more than they do to small books. But certainly both are there, magazines, pamphlets, books, big books. They all have a specific role that they all play. All of them are meant to bring people. Just like sometimes people may get a big book, but they may tend to read a small book easier than they will a big one, and then from there they'll go on to reading the big book. Especially, for instance, in England, not exactly the most cultured part of the world or most literate part of the world, so people may only read a big book once they've already gotten the investment of having read a small one. So it's all Krishna, you know, whether Krishna is more potent when he's 3 months old or when he's 15 years old, it's still Krishna. So people will get the same benefit. Pardon? Yeah, benefit they get is the same. In terms of long term, Prabhupada would consider that there's a better likelihood that they will hold on to a Bhagavatam, especially since they probably gave £3 to £4 for it, than a small book which they may be giving some change for.
In other words, that makes the book more dear to them. And because Krishna reciprocates according to that, then maybe you can think of different process.
Over the longer term, there may be added benefit for them, but in terms of potency,
absolutely,
same message.
Yeah, absolutely, you can't say that. That would be against that
philosophy. Could I just take a little different tack here for a few minutes? So
yeah. Why don't you just take over, because I'm going to prepare now.
I
I've had Devaki Sutta working with us now for 6 months, and he's very professional in managing the accounts. And what we have now is a breakdown by department of income and expenditure, analyzed through a process called profit and loss, which means that you have basically the income that you make from whatever source it comes from, minus the cost that it of goods needed to make that money. And then you add to that donations, and that gives you what you call your gross income. Then take away from that what are called overheads, fixed expenditure. And then that total of expenses subtracted from your total gross income gives you either a profit or a loss. So I've had Devaki Sutta analyze the temple in terms of the number of devotees in different departments, and break it down into what we call the administration, the restaurant, the dini department, the preaching department, the Indian community program, the book distribution department. Right? And it's very interesting, the figures that show up here, because the restaurant's now starting to make profit. And Rupa Raghunath's program is also starting to make profit from the Indian preaching program. The two departments which necessarily don't make a profit in financial terms are the administration and the preaching, because administration means it costs money, and the only way you can make money in administration is by saving money, which means, you know, you're working at cutting your costs all the time. That's how the administration makes money, by saving money. And the preaching department, well, you know, that's something we just invest in, you know, with
making
the hope
money
that...
by making devotees.
Yeah, you know, with the plan that we'll make devotees, and eventually those devotees will be working in some part of the project that... Well, some of them, not all of them, because some of them are needed in administration or in the DD department. But even the DD department is on the verge of starting to make a profit because of the way the shop is developing. The shop has gone from like £1,800 a month to nearly £4,000 a month now under Narmada's management, which means that we're almost on a position where the DD department is making a profit. Right now, if we spread all the costs out, that is like everything that's involved, spread it, the DD department's making a slight loss, but that'll change very soon. The point I'm getting at is this. It was very interesting for June that, and it reflects back in other months, that the profit that was made by the book distribution was exactly equal to the loss that was made by the preaching and the administration department. And the restaurant and the Indian preaching, they're at the point where they're more or less breaking even, just making a couple of £100 profit. So what it means, though, is all the hard work that's been going on to get the standard right, especially with the restaurant, and now the hard work that's has been done to get the Indian preaching going. What it means is this, that the restaurant and the Indian preaching department can go on developing now. And whatever increase in profitability they get means more books distributed, because there'll be less money needed from your activities to do administration and maintain the preaching. And what it works out at, therefore, is that with the projection that we're working on, by this time next year, the restaurant and the Indian preaching will be maintaining the temple completely. And all the book distribution has to do is maintain itself. Which means this year we're already at the end of June, going into mid-July now, we've already done what we did last year to BBT. We've already contributed this year so far what we did for the whole of last year. And our projection is to more than double it this year. We did £66,000 last year for BBT.
And we're projecting 150,000 pounds this year. But what I'm getting at is with the work that's going on with the restaurant and the Indian preaching, as that's developing, we will increase. And there's a very strong possibility that we can do 300,000 pounds next year, double it again. Now that depends on one thing. I mean, you know, I'm personally putting a lot of energy into the restaurant from now on to get it rolling. But what I have to be sure of is your commitment. So I want you to think very seriously that your commitment to this program that we're all involved in. What this shows up very nicely is that the Sankirtan spirit pervades everything here. These devotees who are cooking down in that kitchen now, when I give them these figures, they're getting really off. They're really starting to understand how they're connected with what's going on. I know that they're baking bread and cooking subjects and making cakes. They're thinking in terms of look at you, how many books the world is sent out there. And they're committed. They're committed to making this temple sufficiently self-sufficient in terms of the restaurant. Really, the restaurant are the ones that want to do it. They're the ones that the devotees in the restaurant, they want, they're setting their sight on having this temple completely maintained by the restaurant by this time next year. So, I think that's a wonderful thing. But what I say to you all is that you can see actually Krishna's putting us through the ringer a little, and we're down 30.